I don't know what everybody else is talking about on their podcast. I was thoroughly enthralled with today's.
Yeah. It was very good. Very good. You did a good job today, Glenn. Congratulations.
I didn't need a pat on the head.
Hey,
like
buddy, you're
puppy.
Doing okay.
You're not even looking at me.
Hey, man.
You're not even looking at me. He's not even paying attention to what I'm saying. Yeah, this is bad. We talk about actually this kind of thing towards the end of the podcast. We get into what's coming digitally and eye tracking. And it's terrifying. And it is right around the corner. The reason why we got into that is because of an oligarch in America, and that is Jeff Bezos. One of our listeners has been wrestling with him for a while, and they have the evidence, the proof, that the government and Bezos or Amazon are one in the same. It's a fascinating hour you don't want to miss. Also, we had in hour number two of today's podcast, we talked to a guy who is an expert on the Catholic Church, the doctrine, and the war inside the Vatican. And it's very Da Vinci Code. The former Pope just published, right after he died, he had published a book where he exposes the darkness and the evil that he was fighting in the Catholic Church. Nobody's talking about it. We are. This will be one of the only places you hear it. And I started with something that was written in 1937, but is a warning and a challenge to all of us today, as if it was written today. All on today's podcast, brought to you by Built Bar. You know, I blame my fatness on Lisa.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
Wife.
Yeah.
Because she
introduced me to Built Bar.
That's causing your fatness? I think it's the opposite. It's probably the only healthy thing you eat in a week.
Yeah, but nowhere on the wrapper does it say how many you should eat.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah,
there are
it's
limits.
Almost like donut holes, you know? You get a box of minis. I could eat a box of minis, but I feel like a pig if I eat a box of donuts.
Mm.
Same amount, guys. Same amount. Anyway, Built Bars, they are really great if you're trying to keep your weight off or get your weight down, or you just want a great protein bar. 130 calories, 4 grams of net carbs, 17 grams of protein, made with 100% real chocolate, and they have amazing flavors that you're going to love. The latest is, did somebody eat my Built Bar? There was a Built Bar here yesterday. I was saving it for today. I'm sorry, I've got to cut this short. I am going to find. Built.com, use the promo code Beck. Get $15 off your order. Promo code Beck, 15 bucks off now. Built.com. Seriously, where is it?
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Welcome to the Glenn Beck program. We have Adam Morgan on. He is South Carolina State Representative. He is also the chairman of the South Carolina Freedom Caucus. What's happening in South Carolina is pretty amazing. The Post and Courier said South Carolina State House Republicans see their divide air on full display in contentious day. State House tensions brewing between members of the hard right House Freedom Caucus and their GOP colleagues spilled out into the open in a fiery floor debate amid conflicting accounts of who's even a legitimate member of the ruling Republican ranks. Okay, this is really quite an amazing story, and I wanted to talk to Adam about it. I am a big supporter of the Freedom Caucus. I do not know the members of this particular Freedom Caucus, but I think there should be a Freedom Caucus in every state, especially those that we think, oh, yeah, that's all Republican. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, are they constitutional Republicans or are they progressive Republicans? Adam Morgan is with us now. Hi, Adam.
Hey, Glenn. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. So tell me what this all stemmed from.
Well, we came back to session, all the members of the Republican caucus, and we were given new rules that the Republican caucus had passed. And in the rules, there was a new loyalty rule that you were not allowed to engage in campaign activities of any kind against other members. And there was now a signature line on the rules, which has never been there before, that basically is a promise that we will agree to abide by, adhere to, and comply with these new rules that just kind of came out of nowhere. And my members, as you mentioned in the Freedom Caucus, were just not going to do that.
You wouldn't say, jawohl, mein Führer, and make sure that you didn't step out of line with the party? Wow.
Absolutely not. And I think the most shocking part is we told them before the rules were adopted, we said, look, this is nuts. Our people in our districts are going to go nuts. We're not going to willingly sign away our First Amendment rights. Like, you literally put a pledge in this. This is awful. We're not going to sign it. We can't sign it in good conscience. And they ignored it, didn't fix it, forced the rule change, and kicked us out of caucus.
Wow. Okay.
All the most conservative members, the hard right, as you read earlier, which I'll wear that as a badge of honor.
Yeah, me too. So let me make sure that I understand. You went in and they said everybody has to sign this loyalty pledge. Is that what they called it?
They're saying, of course, the words, it's just an agreement to abide by rules.
Right.
But
and the rules were,
you have to sign it on your honor.
Right. And so you had to sign it. And if you signed it, if there was somebody who was just sucked as a Republican and was a huge progressive Republican, you couldn't speak out against it. You couldn't help mention names that were running against that person or support them. Do I have that right?
Yeah, most definitely not the second part. That was the whole question. Immediately, we're like, well, what is campaign activities of any kind? And, we had a big discussion, and those are technically under caucus confidentiality, so I won't say what individuals said, but I'll just tell you the definition was hugely sweeping, broad and sweeping. And yeah, you cannot criticize in a way that would make people want to, vote against a member. You absolutely cannot endorse if a great conservative challenger comes in. And think about this. If a Republican suddenly comes in and says, we want to defund the police, we want to, go to, third trimester abortions, all that kind of stuff. None of us, not a single member who, signs that pledge, can go out and call that person out and say they need to be removed, we need a great challenger, or if their challenger runs, you can't endorse them, or you can get kicked out of the Republican caucus in South Carolina.
So one of the things you guys expected was that they were going to come back right away when they call the House into session. They would approve the allotment of the remaining over half $1 billion in coronavirus relief funds that came from Washington. And they were going to say, yeah, we're going to work on our sewers with this. Well, that's not coronavirus. And what are you doing? And you guys wanted to either put money on it to make sure that it was used in the proper way or just give it back as a tax rebate, right?
Yeah, we had several different plans. And a lot of this is, some people call them Biden bucks, the ARPA funds that
right.
can be used for transportation and different infrastructure things. And we just had several amendments that were common sense, good policy, and so we decided to make a stand. As I mentioned, we're kicked out of Republican caucus, and it's just our Freedom Caucus now. And so we went at it, and some of the amendments were shot down, but we actually got one passed that I was able to amend that banned members from from profiting from the legislation.
Oh, geez.
So we wouldn't be able.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, that was the amendment that I put on it.
Wow.
You would have thought I threw a grenade in that room, by doing that amendment.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
But it passed. So, we had a big win. And now, in South Carolina, we've had a problem with that in the past, legislators having businesses that then go and get the contract to profit off the legislation we passed. So
every state
now
has that.
It can't.
Okay, so Adam, how many Freedom Caucus members are there in South Carolina?
We have 20 members, which is actually a really
large.
Good number, and kind of shocking when you think about, it's the fourth of the Republican Caucus, the fifth of the legislature, and that they would that we could be targeted and kicked out of the Republican Caucus is really shocking, unconscionable. There's so many words for it, but I'll just say this. I would have thought a year ago, a month ago, this could never happen here. in South Carolina. We're a ruby red state. It just can't happen. And what's going on is it's a battle for the Republican Party, for the soul of the Republican Party.
Correct.
And it's happening here. It's going to I think it might happen in every state.
Oh, it's happening here in Texas, and not enough people that actually believe in the Constitution and the freedom of Texas. They're not standing up. It's not being reported anywhere. And this GOP has gone awry in Texas big time. If it's happening here, it's happening everywhere. So, yeah, Adam, exactly. Let me ask you. So you guys are out of the caucus. How do you actually then fight for freedom and pitch this battle if you're on everybody's enemies list?
Yeah, and we are on everyone's enemy list, definitely of both some in the Republican caucus and definitely the Democrats. You know, we have been fighting. We just really formed as a Freedom Caucus in the last year. And since we did that, we have had some really big wins. We went after a pediatric transgender clinic that was operating in a hospital where they were seeing kids 4 to 18 to do therapies and counseling and even full medical procedures to transition children on the taxpayer dime. And we FOIA'd them, put pressure, and then suddenly they announced and it's closed. And then we sued some rogue school districts that were violating state law that nobody would do anything about. Nobody would deal with it. And so now we've gotten, you know, the programs that were indoctrinating teachers in how to teach and implement CRT. Those are now removed. And so we, and then the amendment I just mentioned. So there's definitely ways that we can have legislative wins. We just have to be willing to stand up to the pressure from the left and from our own party.
So are the people supporting you? Are the people aware in South Carolina that this is going on and have called the GOP and said, hey, what are you doing?
Yes, I think that a lot of people are aware and there's more awareness every day. You know, the movement is growing. People, when they find out about this, just really anyone in the party is scandalized and very much supportive of what we're doing. And, you know, we're getting the calls and the emails, stand strong. Don't cave in. You know, this is the real battle. And I know they've been calling and really that's what we need more of. You know, people in South Carolina, they need to contact their representatives, their Republican representatives and say, demand this rule change. Because, you know, there's members in there who have said, oh, I didn't really know what was going on. I didn't know what I was signing. You know, mm-hmm. and some will even say, thank y'all for fighting.
Right.
You know, they're not openly fighting yet, and I'm hoping they will. But, you know, they're saying, you know, thank y'all for fighting for our First Amendment rights. And so, you know, I'm hoping that the members, because there are still some conservatives in the room, that they will stand up and demand this to be changed, because that's what's got to happen. It's got to be the members that are in there.
And tell me why they didn't want you to post any image of the House Electronic Voting Board.
Yeah, that one is a bit of a mystery. One of the House leadership even used that in a speech, saying that we should, before we post, we need to search our hearts, and basically acting as though it's a bad, negative thing for us to go and inform the electorate about the votes, you know, that are going on in the House, because it makes other members look bad. And I just, yeah, I don't think I really can defend that. That's so ludicrous to me.
There's no transparency. I elected you, put you in. I want to see how you're voting. I want to see what you're voting on and how you're voting. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a giant board. It's there for transparency so that everyone knows how we vote. We should be on the record. We should be held accountable and brought to task for our votes. And members, you know, can't – the fact that they would try to use social pressure – to get people not to share because it makes others look bad. It's like, well, just stand by your vote. Or how about you just vote the way your district wants you to and the people want you to, and
exactly.
Then you got nothing to hide.
Right, right.
It's just that simple.
Right. All right. Well, I wish you the best of luck in South Carolina. Let us know any updates, if things are changing, if you need some more to rally the troops in South Carolina, let us know. I strongly urge you, if you are in South Carolina, to call your state house, your state representatives, and tell them, stop this. This loyalty pledge is ridiculous. Stop it. I support the Freedom Caucus. It is so important that you do this, because this, for the very first time, for the very first time, there are groups of people, not only in Washington, but in our state house, that are actually standing and doing what they said to us they would do. If we abandon them now, we deserve what we get. These people are brave enough to stand. We must support them. If you're in South Carolina, make sure you call them. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Glenn.
God bless. You bet. And by the way, this is happening in all of our states. So look into your state and find those fighters. By the way, this is what this loyalty pledge said. Prohibit members from endorsing or campaigning on behalf of anyone challenging a GOP incumbent in the spring's primary elections. It would prohibit lawmakers from posting images of the House Electronic Voting Board on their social media pages and from discussing the internal processes behind House votes during public appearances. Basically, don't talk about anything. What happens here stays here. I'm sorry. There's a gallery for a reason. You're supposed to be able to be transparent. Now, we just have different ways of transparency now. Not everybody can go to the Capitol and watch the proceedings, and we don't trust our journalists to tell us the truth anymore. So you don't have any right to muzzle anyone on the floor. The people have a right to know what's going on, and don't ever, ever, ever sign anything where you give up your First Amendment right. This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. Dr. Taylor Marshall is with us now, the author of Infiltration, the infiltration of the Catholic Church, the plot to destroy the church from within. This is a universal story now. Doctor, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on, Glenn.
You bet. So we follow your work a great deal because you talk about other things other than Catholic things. But I want to make sure that people understand right from the beginning, we are not taking on the Catholic Church, and this is not a Catholic bash session.
No, not at all. Okay. I consider myself a Catholic. I attend Mass every day, sometimes more. I have a beautiful Catholic family. We have 8 children.
Jeez.
And I love Christ. I love the church. And that bothers me that there's these wolves in sheep's clothing, in shepherd's clothing even, doing horrible things to children, to bank finances, to all kinds of scandals. And I think that the answer is just to shine light on it and to expose it. And so that we can have some true change and get things back on track the way God wants it.
Right. And there's going to be a lot of Catholics that listen and will hear you, like Nancy Pelosi, who consider themselves Catholic, that will disagree strongly with some of the things that you're saying. But I think that's the point, because there is this kind of feeling among Catholics about Pope Francis. Is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? I don't know if we'll ever get to that question, but I want to talk about Pope Benedict, because this was very bizarre when Pope Benedict resigned. I think it was the first time, right? Where he resigned in...
Well, it's first time in 597 years.
Okay.
So it's been a while.
All right.
Pretty rare event. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And when he resigned, it seemed very odd. It was preceded by European banks pulling the plug on the Vatican Bank, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Well, actually, if we go back just a little bit more, a few months before the Vatican Bank having a kind of a meltdown, there was the butler of Pope Benedict. His name was Paolo Gabrielli, and he was leaking documents to the press and to journalists, and no one knew how this was happening. And finally, he was caught. He pled guilty, and he was sentenced to prison in the Vatican. And then Pope Benedict oddly pardoned him, and that led to a whole investigation that was headed up by Benedict, a secret investigation. 3 cardinals did it, and they presented to him, their sources say, 1 or 2 red binders of all kinds of filth in it. Bank scandals. There's rumored to be pictures of cardinals in drag in those binders. All kinds of nasty things. And that all happened in December of 2012. And then January 1st of 13, the Vatican museums cannot process money. The ATM machines in Vatican City stop working. And shortly thereafter, we have the announcement of Pope Benedict that he's going to resign. The very next day, all those banking problems were fixed. They were resolved. And by the way, that night that Pope Benedict announced that he was going to resign, that's the night when lightning struck the Vatican, which everyone noticed, which was a sign for a lot of people.
So this is right along the lines of what we're seeing in the deep state in the United States. We are seeing with the World Economic Forum, which I know you are very well aware of. Is there any evidence that this banking thing was to put pressure on the Pope? Get out.
I think so. And the reason for this, and you say deep state, and I really think everyone needs to put it in their vocab, deep church. The same thing happening in the state is happening in the church. We can refer to deep state and we can refer to deep church.
And it is not just the Catholic Church. These people have been working behind the scenes for years.
Yes. And you got to remember that the Vatican is unique in that the Vatican is its own nation. It's called a city state. It has its own sovereignty. Technically, Vatican City does not belong to Italy. It's its own micro country. And as a micro country, it has its own bank. Now, I just want the listeners to think about this. If you are a drug runner, a human trafficker, a mob boss, your biggest problem is what do you do with all this money? You've got to launder. You got to get it into legit means and move it around, right? And what if there were a bank on Earth that belonged to a micro nation that was not regulated by the EU, that was not regulated or audited by anyone on the outside? Well, there is that bank in the world, and that bank is called the Vatican Bank. And so every crony on Earth wants a piece of that bank because you can legitimize illegitimate money. And that's why the Vatican Bank has had a problem of scandals almost every 5 to 10 years since the 1960s. The temptation to use that Vatican Bank is high, and the temptation for corrupt cardinals in the church to let people get their fingers into that pie is also very high. And that's only one piece of this whole puzzle. But I think that helps people understand why the Vatican Bank is constantly plagued with scandals.
Okay, so let me make sure I understand the good guy here. Benedict, is it your thesis that Benedict was working to end all that corruption and expose it? And possibly even his butler was being used by Pope Benedict to out all of this stuff. Go ahead.
Yeah, those are questions that we're still trying to figure out. And I want to be very careful not to say, you know, Pope Benedict was the, you know, super saint mastermind playing 4D chess. I mean, this is an old man who's in his 80s. And I mean, it's very few of us have had the experience of being old and tired and surrounded. And so I don't think we can make it just as easy as the good guys and the bad guys here. But definitely Pope Benedict was doing investigations, and he appointed a man who's become very famous in the last few years, Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano.
I love him.
Who audits. Yeah, he's great. He's just he's a good guy. He appointed him back in, I think it was 2009. He appointed him Secretary General of the Vatican City Governorate. And this is sort of a ruling body. And he wanted him to look into the financial accountability of the Vatican Bank. And as soon as he was hired by Benedict for this job, he found a negative deficit of the equivalent of $10.5 million and then found in a surplus of random money that was in various bank accounts of $44 million. He did that in just 12 months, Vigano did, which shows you that the people who were already in there were playing fast and loose with the accounting. So Vigano exposed that. Immediately, he was being called out by his superiors, some cardinals. I won't go into all the names, but if you want them, I can give them to you.
That's all right.
And he got in big trouble. And so what did Benedict do? He took Vigano and said, okay, look, you're in hot water here. I'm going to transfer you to be the apostolic nuncio, the ambassador to America, Washington, D.C. Now I want you to go and do an audit on the American bishops and the American Catholic Church. Jeez. That's what Vigano did. And guess what? He uncovered the Cardinal McCarrick scandal. Cardinal McCarrick was the Archbishop of D.C. who was molesting children, embezzling money, just a wicked Judas of a man. Vigano exposed that. And then, of course, Vigano has spent the last 5 years pointing the finger at Francis for corruption. So all these characters are woven together. It's a pretty small world in the Vatican.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
The founder of The Riveter, she's really, I mean, I feel stupid sitting in the same room with her. She's a graduate of Emory University, NYU School of Law, practiced corporate litigation with a focus on high-profile First Amendment matters for over a decade in New York and then in Seattle. Mother of four, contributor for Inc., the host of iHeartRadio's What's Her Story with Sam and Amy. She's raised $30 million in venture capital to grow The Riveter. She's also been published in the Washington Post, Newsweek, Seattle Times, and she's been all over the world speaking. Fortune's Most Powerful Women. I mean, jeez. Overachieve much, Amy?
No.
So, Amy, you were on with us. By the way, welcome.
Thank you.
Glad you're here.
Thank you.
And you're sitting up taking nourishment. That's always good. You came in here for the Targets of Tyranny special, and we had been in correspondence for a while because of what happened to you and your husband in Seattle with Amazon and the feds. Can you quickly just recap that for anybody who doesn't remember?
Yeah. So my husband worked for Amazon Web Services for nearly 8 years. If you don't know, AWS is a subsidiary of Amazon where the internet lives. Cloud computing lives in these big data warehouses across the world. My husband worked in real estate, helped scouting locations that would be good to build data centers and projects along those lines. He left Amazon in 2019. And on April 2nd, 2020, the FBI knocked on our door. We learned then that my husband was being accused, at the time we didn't know by who, of a crime called private sector honest services fraud, which is depriving your private employer of your honest services. At the time, the FBI did not ask my husband what happened. It was clearly an accusation. And 2 months later, the government used civil forfeiture to seize all of our family's bank accounts.
Your bank accounts, your husband's, your joint, everything.
I mean, to the point, Glenn, the DOJ went into our law firm's client trust account and seized all of the money we had paid our lawyers.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
And my husband at that point had never been charged with a crime. In fact, he never was ever charged with a crime. Civil forfeiture is something the government can use. It's a tool. And they can seize your money, your home, your safe deposit box.
Squeeze you in every way they possibly can. And many times you don't get the money back.
You really don't. And we really were kind of told, like, don't expect to ever get the money back no matter what.
That's craziness.
It is crazy.
That's, I mean, King George, you know, Declaration of Independence style stuff.
Well, and the thing is, you know, it's a tool, right? Yes. It's a pressure tool. So yes. My husband had been accused on April 2nd, 2020, and the prosecutors wanted him to plead guilty to a crime. It was all very unspecific. It was unclear. And the crazy thing is that largely what my husband was being accused of, depriving Amazon of his honest services, related to actions my husband took after he didn't work at Amazon. But anyway, we did fight, and, you know, we had four little girls. We sold our home, we sold our car, we liquidated our retirement, we borrowed money from family and friends to pay lawyers and to survive.
And didn't they go into your family's accounts too?
Oh my gosh.
Your
so
dad or
my
something?
Father. Yeah. So my father was critically ill. He almost died. He actually got a life-saving kidney transplant in April of 2020. And 2 weeks later, the FBI emptied out his bank accounts. My husband and I had paid for his medical care. So, you know, he would have died if my mother couldn't help him pay his medical bills.
So many times people see this and go, yeah, but there had to be something. You told the story of what that something is, and it revolved around a very expensive lawsuit from Amazon.
So to preface this, we had no idea what was going on. And the day the FBI showed up at our house, my husband hired criminal defense attorneys and said, please call Amazon and tell them I will come in and talk to them. I don't understand what's going on, but I have nothing to hide. And Amazon's lawyer said, we will only speak to him if he is pleading guilty to a felony. And at the time, we were like, what is going on? I mean, Amazon's lawyers squarely put the DOJ between the company and my husband. Very few companies have that kind of access to DOJ. Mm-hmm. And for an institution that's meant to be apolitical, that's wrong. It's just wrong. But what we learned over the course of years and spending a lot of lawyer money is that in February of 2020, Amazon broke a contract with a real estate developer. And by the explicit terms of that contract, unless they could prove the developer committed a felony crime, they were going to owe him over $100 million in damages. The next day, after they broke the contract, they had their first meeting with the Department of Justice. They met with the Department of Justice over 100 times, trying to lobby for criminal charges. The government spent countless FBI hours and prosecutors' hours, like essentially doing Amazon's bidding. And what we do know is, despite all of the things that Amazon told the government, they never told the government that they had broken a contract and needed a felony, or they would be liable for $100 million in damages.
So you decided to fight. Yes. I mean, you know, you guys are fighters. You decided to fight. It has cost you a great deal. Your husband, nor you or anybody else, has ever been charged. You thought this was kind of wrapping up, mm-hmm. and then you came on the special. And I think I may have said, are you sure you want to come on? And I know I said, I hope nothing happens because of this. The day after, coincidence?
I don't really believe in coincidences anymore. Okay. But the day after, the Department of Justice subpoenaed Amazon for all of the documents that Amazon had that had been produced in the civil litigation. Because after Amazon failed to get criminal charges, they sued my husband. And I'll note something about that that I think, you know, Amazon didn't anticipate. But usually when you're accused of a crime, you never get to see the communications between your accuser and the Department of Justice. Mm-hmm. And in this civil case, because Amazon sued my husband was able to see all those communications. Mm-hmm. And they're very shocking. And I mean, to me as a lawyer, I was floored by the things that have been made public that I've been able to see.
Why? What was seen?
Amazon hired a former federal prosecutor from the Eastern District of Virginia. They paid him millions of dollars to lobby his former colleagues for criminal charges. The current prosecutors in Virginia immediately ushered in Amazon for a meeting. They set up a meeting with the prosecutor's press office because clearly this was going to be such a sexy and scandalous case. They never checked anything Amazon said. They never asked to see my husband's terms of employment or his non-compete. Like, they just didn't ask to see it. Amazon said they had paid this real estate developer $16 million. Amazon had paid the real estate developer $0. So nobody ever checked anything. They just went for it.
Because it was really literally an old boys network. I mean, I know you. You know me. Oh, just this is a problem.
I mean, we have an email that's now in the public docket in Virginia where Patrick Stokes, Amazon's lawyer, asked his former colleague, Jessica Aber, who's now the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia, who just sued Amazon's main rival, Google. And Pat Stokes said to Jess Aber, we want to talk to you about civil asset forfeiture. Prosecutors in the Eastern District of Virginia have not used civil asset forfeiture outside of a drug case in 13 years that I can find.
So this is now being looked at again for the second time?
You know, I really think that Amazon keeps pushing DOJ to try to do something, and DOJ isn't doing anything except kind of, you know, just the investigation just kind of hangs out there because it's a threat, right? And unless Amazon can get a felony conviction of this real estate developer, they are going to be liable for damages.
All right. So the reason, and we talked about this, you mentioned this, but I have been seeing more and more stories about people from the DOJ going to work right directly to the Pentagon and people from the intelligence agencies. This is terrifying because there is a public-private partnership that you should be very aware of. Our DOJ, our national security agencies, all of them are using Amazon, Amazon as their cloud bank. When you have that, you have control of the government, or the government has control of you. At best, if one doesn't have something over the head of the other, they're partners in everything. That is extraordinarily dangerous.
It's incredibly dangerous. I mean, and the thing that kind of blows my mind is that no one's even really paying attention to it. I mean, on Amazon's board, they have the former head of the NSA, Keith Alexander. That's not a person with business experience that should be on the board of a big company. The sole reason, I mean, why else would he be there other than to get contracts with the NSA? And sure enough, in 2021, the NSA quietly awarded Amazon Web Services a $10 billion contract. Like, it's something that we should all be very frightened of. It's happening across big tech. It's happening, you know, you've read the Twitter files, you see it everywhere, and Amazon is hiring hundreds of CIA, FBI, former federal prosecutors.
And what, just having those guys in a high-tech company that has the information on each of us that Amazon does, that's not good.
Oh, and
there's no wall between that company and the government.
Absolutely not, right? There's no wall at all. And you look at things like Amazon is now getting into pharma, right? And Amazon just launched a $5 subscription to get your pills. Now you're going to give all your health data to Amazon. It's terrifying. And Jeff Bezos, he's an oligarch, right? If you looked at the indictment of the FBI agent, Charles McGonigal, it described an oligarch, Deripaska, as a man of vast wealth with close ties to the government. That is exactly what Jeff Bezos is.
So what's next in this? Have you written off ever getting your money back?
So we actually got our money back, Glenn. So we pulled off what people thought would be impossible.
Wow.
Yeah. It was.
You should do a podcast just on how to do that. I know lots of people who.
I know.
Just driving through town. They had cash. The sheriff pulls them over. The cop pulls them over. That's ours. I mean, you never get it back. How did that happen?
So the government, it's such a strange process. It goes back to the time of pirates. But when the government seizes your money and they don't charge you with a crime, they then have to sue your asset. So they sue your bank account. It's like US versus $4,000 at Wells Fargo. And they do that because your assets don't have due process. So they can just avoid all due process. So the government here sued our bank accounts, went to the court, paused the case for 6 months. Went to the court again, asked to pause it for 6 months. Judge said you only get 4 months this time. They wanted to pause it again, and it wasn't going to happen. So it was time to litigate, and it was time for the government to prove their case against the bank accounts. And instead of opting to prove the case, the government gave us the money back.
Unbelievable.
And how long was that from beginning to end when you lost the money to when you finally received it again?
It was 22 months.
Jeez.
So for 22 months,
we had nothing.
We had to figure out how to feed our four daughters. My mother was amazing. My mother was a public school teacher, worked her whole life. And my mother kept asking, don't they care about your daughters? You have a baby. And I said, Mom, they don't care. She's like, this is our government. And I said, they don't care. They care about Jeff Bezos and Amazon. They do not care that we have children to feed. They did say when they seized our money, that if my husband pled guilty to a crime, they'd give some of it back. It's such a transparent tool of corruption. It should be gone. It should be abolished.